Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
One of the best in the business. Always enjoy every second I spend with him or talk to him. That's Jerry Dulac. Jerry, welcome back, my friend.
Steve, always good talking with you, my friend. It's good to be with you. And, you know, as much as I love the Masters, and you know I do, because of the history and the tradition and the beauty, from a pure shot-making and competitive standpoint, you give me the U.S. Open and the British Open, and I find the competition a little more captivating.
The test of golf of this, I mean, the champion really is the champion. You don't get away with much at this, do you?
No, you don't, and that's what I like about it. And typically, you know, it's not a birdie fest. It's kind of hold on to the steering wheel and make sure you don't crash. And it's the person who avoids the big numbers typically is what I look for and pay attention to when you get to the weekend. Now, you look at what John Rahm did at Augusta, making double bogey and then going on to win. As you can well imagine, that's something of a rarity. You don't see that happen too often. In the U.S. Open, you do that. You're giving away more shots to the field because there's more birdie opportunities at Augusta National. And there'll be some here at L.A. North. I'm really curious to see this golf course. You know, Steve, George Thomas has designed three courses out there in Hollywood, Riviera, Bel Air, and right. L.A. North and South. And I've played Riviera and I've played Bel Air. And, of course, I love them both. I really like Bel Air, and I think L.A. North plays a little bit more like Bel Air. But I'm just curious to see, with Gil Hans's restoration, I'm just curious to see both the look and how it plays. But you got some really cool holes out there and, you know, some really demanding holes. You know, it starts with a par 5. It's a lot like Riviera. He gets you off onto the golf course. Nothing too demanding, a little soft downhill. I think it's 574, but that's nothing for those guys. And that's kind of like his, you know, his calling card. Get you started with a soft par 5 and go from there. Although I'm thinking about Bel Air, and I think Bel Air started with a par 4. But nonetheless, I just think it's a neat array of holes, a nice mix. And like I said, I don't want to say it. I think they're going to eat it up because I don't think that's the case. But I don't think this is going to be a grueling test of golf. I think it's going to be a question of, you know, who just navigates a golf course that they, let's face it, really haven't seen a whole lot other than this week.
And it's interesting. After you play one, which is, as you mentioned, the par 5, the next 17 holes only have two more par 5s and 5 par 3s.
Right.
And one that can play as short as 75, 80 yards. And one that can play as long as 290.
Yeah, the 290 one, little downhill. So, you know, it'll probably play, you know, more like 250, 260. You know, but for those guys, you know, that's probably a 5-iron. And depending on the wind right. And if they want to bounce it up, depending on how firm, who knows with some of those guys, could be a 6-iron. But, yeah, and the 15th hole is the short one. And I saw it today where they said it could play as short as 68 yards. But it's just such a neat hole. It's like almost like a horseshoe green. And, you know, more like a boomerang, if you will. And it just looks like it would have some really cool pin positions. And I was hearing some of the guys say yesterday that if the pin is on the front right, I think they said, that you might see there's really nowhere to go at that pin, and you might see guys play short of the green. Imagine that, Steve, a 68-yard, that's what it would be, a 68-yard par 3, and they're deliberately trying to play short of the green.
Part of when I've seen Gil Hans and his hands on a course, I love what he does with it, especially what he does with the landscape of it. But what I usually notice about the greens is that you have to hit a spot, and if you don't, the possibility of rolling into a bailout area hat. It's there. That part is the part to me that's not crazy. I'm not crazy about, because you hit the target and the target doesn't let you keep it.
You know, Steve, I'm with you in this regard, and I agree I like his restoration work. Now,
yes,
when he went into Doral and redid that, that was not roundly received by the players. They did not like what he did, but I loved what he did at Southern Hills.
Yes.
You know, I really liked what he did at Brookline. I thought Southern Hills was dramatic, the way he brought the Creeks back into play. I will see what this is, and I saw last week what he's doing at Oakmont, at least with the front nine. And if you've been out to Oakmont and you look at what he's done on the front nine, it's nothing dramatic. But if you know Oakmont and know where the bunkers were and
yes.
how the fairways were, you can see, if you pay attention, oh, yeah, he added a little wider fairway here. Oh, yeah, look, he flattened out the green here, created a better pin position. You know, you talk about the runoffs. He took the runoff behind the third green, which cost Tiger the U.S. Open. He took that out and made that all rough. So now, which is very easy to do on that hole, because you hit it and go over the green, now it's going to be held up by the rough. And instead of it going 40, 50 yards, 30, 40 yards over the green and just facing a really, really delicate, if not impossible, pitch shot. So I like what he's done from a restoration standpoint. He's going to start the back at Oakmont in preparation for the 2025 Open. He's going to start that in September. But they have opened up the front to the members. They'll close it down to the back September 11th. And but what I've seen from all the different places, I like when he gets in there and gets his hands on some restoration and refurbishing, not necessarily a total redo.
Because I love what he does with the land. I think he understands what the original intent happened to be,
yeah.
And he tries to put his personal touch on the original intent. And that's what I've always liked about how he's gone about his business in terms of golf courses that he has put his hands on.
And you know, it's funny too, Steve. A decade ago, the Open doctor, if you will, was Reese Jones.
Yes.
Now the Open doctor who they're bringing in is Gil Hanse. You know,
yeah.
And he did Pinehurst, redid Pinehurst number 4.
Yeah.
Corin Crenshaw did number 2. But yeah, he's become the refurbisher du jour, and seems to be. Now I don't know. Pinehurst is next year, then Oakmont, then Shinnecock. I don't know if they brought him in at Shinnecock. You know, somebody asked me today, why are they redoing Oakmont? And I thought, I don't have a real good question. I mean, answer for that, Steve. But,
right.
Because I see what they're doing, and it looks like they're trying to make it actually more fair, almost easier, if you will, because they're giving them more area to hit the ball. But I think the beauty of what they're doing is they're creating more options. They're putting more decision-making into your shots. Okay, do I want to try and take on those bunkers to that wider area there, or should I land it short here and maybe have a more difficult line to the pin? And I think that's what Gil Hanse tries to do. He's not necessarily making it tougher. The only thing that makes it tougher, Steve, is drastic weather and nasty, nasty rough, which apparently we're going to see here. But I think that's what he's doing at Oakmont, and that's what he did at the other places, and I think that's why what he's doing is viewed very favorably.
Yeah. Obviously, the Live PGA story is a huge story, and Jay Monahan, because of a medical issue, was not on hand to talk about it right now, and hopefully Jay Monahan's going to be okay. But what's the sense you get from players, and that's what is your personal sense of what this can mean?
Well, I have several different thoughts about it, Steve. Like everybody, totally shocked, totally blindsided, totally surprised. When everybody saw that blurb come across their cell phone that they've merged, and everybody thought, are you kidding me? Nobody saw that coming. So that alone was stunning. Now, as some of the layers are being peeled away, we're seeing what it means. But I don't think there's any question the PGA Tour, let's face it, Steve, they're the most powerful, grandest tour, have been and will continue to be, a tour that has the upper hand. Why would they take this on? Why would they do this when they are the premier tour in the world? And the LIV Tour, let's face it, a startup tour that's trying to find its way with television, with sponsors, world ranking points. why would the PGA Tour, quote, jump into bed with them and infuriate a lot of people, including, most importantly, the rank and file, their players? Now,
right.
I think some of that is dissipated from what Jay Monahan and probably more significantly what Jimmy Dunn is saying on his media tour, if you will. But you know what, Steve? I'm going to wait until I hear from the other side. I'm going to wait until I hear from the Saudi people, the PIF people,
mm-hmm.
the Public
yeah.
Investment Fund, because there is no way they're going to make a capital investment to support the DP World Tour, who are the real winners here, if you ask me,
yes.
because they've lost their sponsors, their prize money, and their players. They've either gone to live or they're playing for the money on the PGA Tour. There is no way they're going to make a capital investment like this and just say, okay, we want to invest in your tour and everything's going to stay the same. There is no way. When you put up that kind of money, you want to have some kind of say. And until I hear from them and hear what their feelings are or what their plan is, I'm not going to sit here and think this is a win-win for the PGA Tour, because, first of all, it's just a bad look. You know, Rory McIlroy said he felt like the sacrificial lamb. There he is, you know, parading out for the PGA Tour and showing his support, you know, both verbally and with his actions. And then, you know, he feels like the scapegoat when he finds out that this tour that he hates, that the PGA Tour is all of a sudden in bed with them. So, I'll just kind of hold off on it. It's just a bad look, though, for the tour, and we'll see how it plays out. But there is no question there'll be a pathway back for those players who left to go to the LIV Tour to come back to DP World Tour or the PGA Tour, because, again, they are not going to put up that kind of money and have their players mm-hmm. have the PGA Tour tell their players or tell them what they're going to do. I'll wait till I see that happen.
Yeah, I mean, you and I both know money talks. That's the one area where the PGA Tour could not outlast LIV. They can't
right.
outlast them on the money part of it. And if they have to keep throwing more money into purses and so forth to compete with LIV, because, again, LIV has unlimited funds, does that mean Korn Ferry goes away? Does that mean the Champions Tour goes away? I mean, what do you have to do to sacrifice to compete financially with them? And I wonder if that entered into it.
Well, I don't think there's any question it entered into it. I'll tell you where else it entered into it, maybe even more significantly, was in litigation. All lawsuits,
yes.
of course, in future litigation disappears,
yep.
as does, according to the PGA Tour, according to Jimmy Dunn, so does all recruitment of PGA Tour players, which I believe, you know, they want to stop the acrimony. They want to stop the divide. That is the positive in this whole thing, if in
yep.
fact that's the case. But that's a big reason, because there's no way the PGA Tour can fight the LIV Tour in court on an equal financial basis, because they mm-hmm. just don't have those kinds of deep pockets. And I think the irony here, speaking of the finances, Steve, is that the LIV Tour came about, and the PGA Tour's response was to ask its sponsors to double their money. They basically doubled the purses. You know, they're paying out $3 point some million
mm-hmm.
in these elevated events. And so if they put themselves in a financial bind, which you have to think they have, because this is why they made this deal, it's because they reacted, quote, overreacted to the LIV Tour. And so, but you can understand to a degree why that happened, in that they were losing their players and they didn't want to lose any more. And guys right. were getting offers. Ricky Fowler, $70 million, turned it down. Jason Day had an offer, turned it down. You know why? Because it wasn't enough money. Steve, I'm a firm believer, you know, the old WWE wrestler Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, always said his whole slogan was, every man has his price. And that's
yeah.
true. It's just
yeah.
a question of when do you reach it, you know? And so that's where, you know, that's the irony of why the tour is kind of in this position, because they overreacted, in my opinion, to what LIV was doing. Then again, Steve, I really don't know what Jay Monahan was supposed to do. I think he's mishandled the whole situation, and I say
agree.
That not knowing, I mean, not being able to say, I don't know what he was supposed to do, to be perfectly honest.
Right. There's usually a core group that can win this. I think Jack Nicklaus always said he could walk into the locker room and knew which six guys he had to beat.
Right.
The others were pretty much out of it. So who's in that core group in your mind that can win this that we should look at?
Well, you know, it's funny because a couple of years ago, if you remember, I think Brooks Koepka said at the Masters, if I'm not mistaken, maybe it was at one of the Open, I think he said, whatever the field size was, he felt there were only 15 guys who could beat him. So right. You're looking at the same thing. But I don't think there's any question. The core group, the top three are Brooks Koepka. How could you bet against him after what he did at the Masters and the PGA? Scottie Scheffler, if Scottie Scheffler can even hole half the putts he's looking at, he's going to run away with this because his ball striking has just been phenomenal. And yet he's just not making putts, and he's up on every leaderboard anyway. So if he starts making putts, forget it. He's going to win, and then it's tough, it's tough to bet. Not bet against John Rahm, but certainly it's tough to bet against him. Five of his 12 wins are in California, including his U.S. Open championship. Mm-hmm. He did not play well at the PGA. Then you got a couple others. Steve, I really like Victor Hovland. I know you could throw Rory in there too, but, something's missing from Rory, and I don't know what it is. Two-time Open champ. But something's missing, and part of it is his wedge game is terrible. And then you got the tier, and I don't even know that Victor Hovland is not in that upper tier because you've seen what he's done in his last three majors. He's right there, and he won the Memorial. I like Victor Hovland here, and Jordan Spieth, an Open competitor, he has to stay away from big numbers. But I think you look at those four guys, and you want to throw Victor Hovland in maybe. But I think three in particular, put Rory as the fourth guy, and that's your top four in terms of who can win this. And that's not to discount a guy like Patrick Cantlay, who grew up playing out there, went to school there. He could very well be a factor as well.
What I do wonder about Rory, which is the same thing, believe it or not, I wondered about Dawn Staley at the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament. You see, she spent so much time talking about the issues of women's sports that I felt she did not coach a good game at all and didn't seem engaged in coaching in the Iowa game. I really felt that. And I feel like Rory has had to spend so much time with the politics of it. I wonder what it's meant to his game. It's just an open question, not anything I know about.
Yeah. It's an observation. No, I didn't even think of that in the case of the women's championship. But I don't think there's any question with Rory to the point. One, he canceled his press conference for today or yesterday? Because one, I'm sure he addressed the Liv situation last week. He's tired of talking about it. But you have to think it's also like, okay, I need to focus on what I'm doing here. I was shocked when, I think it was at Augusta, that he did the live interview on Saturday, walking down the fairway. I get that in a regular tour event, but with all the attention being placed on him and all the focus that he was talking about, that he wanted to commit to trying to win the Masters and get the green jacket, and when I saw him agreeing to do an interview, I thought, God, Nick Faldo would never do that. Tiger would never do that. Jack would never do that. I think Rory has to pay, and he is. He's a great guy, and it's hard to condemn a guy who's very honest and open with the media. But I think he needs to back off a little and focus a little bit more on the game as opposed to. I know the media is asking him questions instead of putting his views out there as often as he does. And that's no criticism of him. It's just that I think he should do a little bit, he should find a way to say no a little bit more.
And Koepka wouldn't do it.
That's right. He's not going to do it. That's exactly right.
He would know. In fact, he was asked about the merger, I think it was yesterday, and he says, that was last week. I'm here to win.
Right.
He doesn't want to talk about that stuff.
And it just shows on the golf course. And I think the good thing about this, Steve, real quickly is, and I think we talked about this, about the Masters. I saw this at the Masters. I saw the acrimony disappear, and I saw more of a harmonious approach from the players. Okay, and then when Koepka is there in the lead for 3 days, almost wins, it didn't dawn on me. I saw that nobody cared that he was a LIV Tour player.
That's right.
You know, Phil finishes second. Patrick Reed is three of the top six were LIV players. All anybody cared about and realized was, doesn't matter where they play. We want to see the best players in the world. And the same with Koepka winning in the PGA. And I really believe the Masters was the beginning of facilitating this partnership between the three tours. The people understood, everybody, including the players, we need to have the best players in the world at the biggest times. And this is the only way this is going to happen.
Perfectly said. Perfectly said. Jerry, thanks so much. Great to hear from you, my friend.
Steve, always good chatting with you. And I was a little saddened by my daughter's graduation in May, because that means my trips to State College will be fewer and far between.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. We're going to have to figure out how to straighten that out.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll sneak up there. You can bet on that.
Yeah, thanks so much. And I look forward to seeing you next.
You got it, man. Good talking with you, Steve.